Matthew 16. Yes. Back to the first principle of discipleship. Jesus said unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me.
Where are we?
Matthew 16, verse 24. Then Jesus said unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Do you care what I think that means? Do you care what you think it means? Do you understand that words are only a conspiracy? There's a conspiratorial phenomenon that takes place in a group of people have an agreement that a word is going to mean such and so. So the word has that sort of implied meaning. But we read the Bible and we say, what does deny mean? Today, what does deny mean? What do you, if you hear the word deny, what comes to your mind?
Say no.
Say no. Stop doing something.
Can't have it. I didn't do it.
Not mean it.
I don't get it.
I was walking by and fell.
I can't. Deny means.
I don't have it.
You can't have it.
Don't get it.
Deny means fundamentally I can't have it. Yeah. It's like the word tempt. If I say don't put yourself in a position where you're tempted. The word tempt in English today means what?
Do better.
Enticement to do evil. Yeah. Both words are prominent throughout the scriptures. Tempt and deny. Both words mean totally different in here than what you think they mean in your mind. Why? Because they meant something different at the time they were spoken.
Yeah, it's like meek. It doesn't mean the same thing.
Meek. Meek. That's a great one. Let's start. Meek.
Weenie.
Meek means a weenie. Anybody else?
Weak.
Huh? Weak.
Wimp.
Wuss.
Sissy.
Sissy.
Weasel.
Weasel.
Weasel. Oh, yeah.
No.
That'll be enough.
Okay, so what does meek mean? The meek, if you, for those of you know, meek in the scripture has no word to define it. It means a mountain lion walking through. And he does it. He chooses not to take your head off. The act of him choosing not to take your head off is the act of meekness. Total power, but didn't use it. That's meekness. So we have three words that mean totally different by our language than what they mean in the scriptures. And yet how critical are those words to the meaning of what Christianity is today? If any man will come after me, let him deny himself. Well, the word means, again, for Miss Sherry's sake,
conceal.
It means, it doesn't mean to conceal.
Well, that's what my concordance said.
Deny means to conceal?
That's what my American standard,
New American standard.
And that's why you're loaning me this.
I'm not loaning you that one. It's not mine to loan.
Oh, well, I'll bring it back.
It's not mine to give you even. What? I thought you were going to look at something up in there.
No, I want to take it home.
Well, it's not. You have to make some arrangement with somebody else.
Oh, all right.
Deny is the Greek word apornomai. It doesn't mean stop doing something. It doesn't mean quit. It doesn't mean. It means to take no thought for yourself at all, to deny yourself. If the word said to deny your dog, it would mean never feed your dog. Don't even think about your dog. Your dog doesn't exist. if the word said deny your tree, it would mean don't think about your tree. In your mind, your tree doesn't exist. Don't water the tree. To deny yourself, the first thing, The first requirement of a disciple is to don't even think about yourself. The slightest, any little bit. Not any kind of righteous thinking. Not, well, I'm just trying to think what this means to me. No, you're not. You're trying to figure something out so you can justify yourself. The first requirement of a disciple is to deny themselves. They don't exist. Whatsoever is a gain to you is a loss to Christ, period. And in that abandonment of self, life comes. You can't learn your way into the kingdom. You can't study the damn old Strong's Concordance. You know why I studied so long? You know why I studied for 20 years?
Trying to find a way out.
That's exactly right. This was too awesome. It totally destroyed me. There must be a way in this where I can have some life. That's why I studied. To deny myself means to not, I don't exist. I don't think about myself one iota. Now, can you stop for a moment and maybe comprehend how many of your idiotic problems would be solved if you applied that one little scripture? Deny yourself. Oh, you don't understand all. You don't understand what I'm going through. Right.
I'm special. I'm different.
My problem is special.
Well, I'm different. This is the way I am. You don't understand me. This is the way I am. I'm just this way. It's just difficult for me to speak in public.
I'm just trying to understand.
Just trying to understand. No, you're not. You're trying to get it right. You're trying to establish your own rightness instead of God's. Black and white. You do not have a right to yourself any longer if you want to be a disciple of God. You do not have a right to think about yourself. Not how much you can get by reading the scriptures, not how many times you can find your promises in here. Not how nice you can be, not how this you can be, not how that you can be. You don't exist. You have been bought with a price. You're not your own. Therefore, the stimuli that comes up from within you is no longer your business. Your only business is to let it out. To prophesy. No more carefulness. Do you know how boring carefulness is?
Certainly no life in it.
You know, I'm just trying to get it right. I'm just trying to make sure I do this right. Just to, you know, that's called Phariseeism. Can everybody say Pharisee?
Pharisee.
And there you go.
Sound like Doug.
Everybody say Pharisee.
How many of you can spell it?
P-H-A-R-I-S-E-E.
With a little D and two A's.
Can you spell it?
But if you're sincere, though.
S-I-N-C-E-R.
Sincere. M-E-N-S-T-R-U-A-L-R-A-G.
Ragma.
Stinky ones.
Menstrual rag.
Menstrual rag means sincerity. Okay, let's go back. Jesus' first requirement of a disciple. If any man, better way of saying, if any man wills to come after me, let him abandon himself, deny himself, abandon himself, take no thought for himself. Do you know that that's the desire of everyone's heart? And you know how simple it is? Do you know how that every time your mind starts to think of you, that you slay it? You know that you have that power, that right, that authority, to take dominion over what you think? So you no longer have to be cast about by every wind and wave of this idiot thing? Not anybody, you don't want anybody, you don't want to put yourself in anybody else's control either. That's just as stupid. That's more stupid. You want to be under somebody else's control?
Well, no. I mean, what I was thinking while you were saying that was that it's really a test sometimes throughout the day when, with a look someone gives you or a comment that they
make
to cause me to go, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or if I should have said this, or if I'd actually done that.
Right. What
just by that, just that response. That,
and you give the right to that individual that it's God's right. I mean, nobody should be able to put you on a trip with a glance.
Oops.
But how many? Huh?
Listen, don't look at me like that.
Zoom.
The idea that doesn't need to be a concern of mine. It's really what
we're
for you. You know?
Yeah. I mean, my boss put me on a trip today. She said I was too loud.
Jeez.
I was really concerned about it.
Said,
okay, this time I'm going
to be quiet.
Very quiet.
I mean, it's either that or control. You understand? There's no in between. It's either total abandonment of self or total self-control. Now, what really is evil is about 90% of what goes on in the name of God in the world today is teaching self-control. Can you maybe feel a little bit God's anger at somebody teaching in His name self-control?
I feel like it's a giant cosmic rubber band that's been stretched just about as far as it's going to stretch.
That's right. He said, now I will arise. Now I will show myself. He's been hidden. And the Word of God has been hidden for 2,000 years. Deny yourself. Pick up your cross. Remember this? Remember what that means?
Yep.
Cross means one thing. It means you're dead. But it's much more than you're just dead. The cross was the most horrendous, the most shameful way of death there was in the Bible, in the Roman Empire. If, for instance, they really wanted to shame someone, if they were killed, they would, after they were dead, they would nail them to the cross. It was shame beyond shame. It was the worst thing that could happen to you in the face of the human race, is to be hung on a cross and dead. Because it shamed your family, it shamed your name, it shamed everything about you. You became the offscouring of all things. Now, so it has a trick. The trick is, there's two summary commands here. One, in the Greek language, it's a summary command. Abandon yourself, pick up your cross. To do those two things is the extent of everything taught in here. The follow me is then in the tense that means it is the natural progression. If you abandon yourself and pick up your cross, you will follow Him. You cannot do anything but. You understand that? Abandon yourself, pick up your cross.
And that's really the only time you can follow Him. Otherwise it's all mind game.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, there's no... The only time you can follow Him is you're not concerned about following Him.
No, but you can't follow
Him. I mean, the idea that... just trying to be like Jesus. Don't fuck.
Yeah, how is that? Okay. Tell me about how that is.
Good for you.
Yeah,
just mocking your songs.
He gave me one of them looks. I figured I'd hit myself before he got to me.
That's what Gary does.
Pie in the face here, let me take it.
I'll smack it.
You learned from that, Rick. Now, every other, what we've just said just throws out all religion. throws out all of our ideas, all of our opinions, all of our theologies.
All our beliefs.
Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross.
Kill
a bug.
Using your
death
watch.
Death to all bugs.
In the better text,
your
it does
watch.
Have to say about
your
the
watch.
Killing the bugs.
Kill the bug.
Back to Matthew. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. If you seek to save your life under any guise, you'll lose it. I mean, and what does it mean to seek to save your life? It means to protect yourself. And the tell that you're protecting yourself is that you're justifying yourself. And it should be the instant red flag. If you seek to save your life, you'll lose it.
It's like when you're trying to get something in the water, like out of the bath or something, and it just,
yeah,
you never can get it.
In the Bible, this Bible has Greek and Hebrew and has lexiglades in the back, and I looked up the life.
Really?
And it says that the soul, that immaterial part of man, held in common with animals.
Well, Oli, if we're not to take thought for ourselves, then... Because I know I've heard you say before that it would be best for people if we had like 6 months savings for when the bottom drops out. Isn't that protecting yourself?
No, I'm just saying it's the idea that you, we also say you shouldn't be in debt if you don't. I mean, the reason you're not is it's a spiritual meaning of money. I don't give a crap about the world. I don't care whether you're in debt. I don't care whether you have any money. I care that how you handle money is a revelation of your spiritual condition. And if you've sold yourself and sold and you're in debt financially, I can guarantee you you're in debt spiritually. You've already spent the pleasure that you're going to have. And so a discipline of that, so that it'll be a manifestation of the spirit, is to do the thing with the money. It has nothing to do with whether the world's going to come apart or not. If you have a plan, like I'm really excited about going to the Republican National Convention.
Shut up.
You asked. But what you will do is you will have spent that enjoyment. You'll spend tomorrow's enjoyment today. And so you spend your life trying to catch up. So that's why the only now is now. Now is the accepted time. Okay?
Well, I kind of have something to confess at this point.
Oh.
See, I even have a balance on my credit card carried over from 1 month from Cancun and stuff. And so I mean, I want to go to the convention anyway, but while I'm going to the convention, I want to make the money that I'm going to make there to pay for something. So is that the spiritual in debt? I know I want to use the money, too, to pay for first fruits and...
Same thing, yeah, because, again, it's so much better to be out of debt. Once you're out of debt, spiritually and everything, then you can truly enjoy now that heaven on earth. It's the Lord's Prayer is, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. It didn't say on earth, it says in earth. And in earth, then you can live and you can be in heaven now. You don't have to wait.
Yeah.
So that's the whole mystery. That's fine.
Yeah, I think it'll rest on the credit card balance.
Well, again, just as soon as you can, get out of debt.
Yeah. Well, just look at the comparison of what it would be like for that. I mean, you have to take thought because you have this balance of Cancun hanging over your head, just, following you from month to month.
know, it's forcing you to look at it, though. I mean.
Well, I know you may not be worried about it consciously, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's at the back of your mind. It's a nagging continuum that keeps you from freedom.
It's sometimes you get just enough overtime to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah, it's always it's always a secret little whispering agenda saying, well, like if you have a choice to work or not work, well, I better work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So your choice is already made for you.
But instead of being at rest, then you have to work.
Yeah.
You can't enjoy the present labor because... You put yourself in debt.
You're back to being a hamster.
Yeah.
But it's really important to see. Forgive me. If I give you the impression I thought I cared whether whether the economy is good or not, I don't care about. That's not why I want you to have 6 months savings. It's the discipline so that you can see with money this what the spiritual truth is. Does that communicate? Do you understand, everybody? Okay.
So like you see, now is now and not...
Yeah.
Now is not...
Now the treasures are here. Now. I mean, you don't
have to...
There's
no lack.
There's never any lack.
Yeah.
And that can be then the habit of how you think. But I'm... You all know, I mean, bring that up, if you want to talk about it in a minute, the world is on the brink of financial disaster. Right now, tonight, the Nikkei Index in Japan is just tumult. It's just... The London Stock Exchange is going crazy. It's who knows what could happen if just to give you a little twinge, if the Nikkei Index and the Tokyo Index goes down below a certain point, it means that all of the wealth in Japan that's over here, the $180 billion that's in U.S. Treasuries, will be pulled out to keep their economy afloat. The moment that happens, we'll see a depression like you've never seen before.
Well, you know, Daryl's company's laying off. I look at the money in my company, and we're one payroll away always.
But this is so massive,
somebody,
you can't believe. I mean, this is.
I don't know what, like what exactly the figure wise, but somebody said something like 50% or some unbelievable percentage of the amount of money that we had due on the debt comes due in 93.
Jeez.
I mean, so. I mean, like this incredibly large percentage you couldn't possibly pay off.
See, what they're doing now, they're doing everything possible, and we'll do it. The administration will do it. They'll try to bring the discount rate down to probably 1.5 to 2%. They'll push as much money into the economy as they can between now and the election time. But and so they may be able to keep it afloat until then, but my God, there's got to be...
Well, I mean, that's one thing that Perot said, was that this country's more broker than anybody even realizes. He's the only one who's saying it. Everybody knows.
We became a. This fascinates me. This is the kind of stuff that. I'm not saying it means anything, but it fascinates me. What? We became a body in October of 1976. That's when we were recognized instead of just a Bible study. We were a people. Not the bananas didn't, but I mean the other group did. In October of 1976, the United States was the richest country that had ever lived, had ever been on the face of the earth. It had more money and had more assets than all the rest of the countries combined. Today, the United States is the poorest country that has ever existed on the face of the nation, on the face of the world. We owe more money than all the rest of history, all the rest of the nations, including the U.S., in history, have ever owed. And so, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? You combine every debt of every nation that has existed in history.
Not since the Reagan administration,
no.
Right?
See, Crystal, you can be president.
I mean, so in this short period of time that we've existed, we've gone from being the richest economy that has ever existed on the face of the earth to the poorest economy by 1,000,000% that has ever existed. And it can't continue. We're just living in a dream world.
It's beyond fixing.
It can't be fixed.
The idea that the Republicans with the administration will want to pump up the, you know, the economy, and I know Democrats do it too, but the idea to pump it up so that, you know, just to get to November.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, that's what I mean.
That's what we do.
That's what we're talking about.
That's what we do.
That's what you do on every paycheck.
Well, it's Christmas. The kids got to have toys. We'll worry about that in January.
Yeah, we've got to.
Well, it's graduation.
We'll borrow one of those toys.
Well, we'll go on a vacation anyway.
But we're not subject. The thing that you have to see is that, as a people, we are not subject to any of that. And I want you to hear this real carefully. While from that moment forward, we were at that point in October of 1976. For an extended period of time there, I was making $15 a week, and that was like all the money the foundation had. I mean, we weren't in debt, but we were really, we didn't have anything. During the period that the economy of the United States has gone to pot, we as a people, we still don't have any money, but we spend a whole lot more. I mean, we're supporting a whole lot of things. We're supporting a whole lot of people, a whole lot of homeless people. The whole thing, I mean, we've gone just the opposite in terms of the increase and the tithes and the offerings and everything that we're doing has gone the opposite of what the world is. And that's what I'm trying to say to you, that we are not subject. We don't care what happens in the world. It doesn't, nothing that we are about is dependent on what happens in the world. That's why we are sanctified. We are a people set apart. And we are set apart not just in theory, we are set apart in reality because we are a community. The idea that we could have common meals together is a huge mystery. Some of you can only come, like Tyra, can only come at noon most of the time. But it's like that experience is an anchor.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I mean, it's the act of sanctification. I mean, it becomes something that we're not subject to anything. You realize we could be pulled out and put in any country in the world and it wouldn't change us effectively. We could be pulled out and put in any time period of history and the doctrine certainly, the teaching wouldn't change. We wouldn't change. We are a people that is not dependent on time in any way. We are not dependent on geography. We are not dependent on any external circumstances that the world... I mean, that's a blessing that you can't even conceive of. We don't care whether the stock market is high or low, or Republicans or Democrats or communists or fascists. I don't care who's in power. Remember we even prayed for Nebuchadnezzar because he was the instrument of the chastisement. But it sets us apart, and when that's felt and known and seen, then that certainty becomes our anchor, and nothing can touch us. And we don't have to seek to save ourselves. That's so boring. Oh, let's see how we can improve ourselves. We don't have anything to protect. That's in the midst of all these lawsuits, when Tilton was suing us, and there was a different motion coming at us every moment, seemed like, in Tulsa. The attorneys could not believe us. I mean, literally. Because we had absolutely nothing to protect. And we had absolutely nothing to hide. And it just blew them away. I mean, we were a sign and a wonder at Harry and I in those attorneys' offices. I mean, we went up there every day, sat around.
Had a good time.
Told Joe. But the attorney, I mean, they were just blown away. And it's because...
I love Michael Lynn's when he said...
Yeah.
One day he reminded everybody that we had nothing to hide, and Michael Lynn's went, "I'm supremely aware of that." He said, "I'm supremely aware."
Wait,
we had nothing to hide.
We were in a big meeting with all the attorneys, and I said, "We have nothing to hide." And Michael, because he was our number one attorney that was doing it pro bono, and he's always trying to protect us, always trying to do something. He said, "I am supremely aware of that."
In other words,
shut up already, shut up.
What you were saying,
he really was like a father with these wild children.
I got such a kick out of seeing the thing last night. It was like that lady came over here with a camera, and she's got to show something. Yeah. So what does she show? We know what she shows. She shows the common meal. I mean, people come here, like the guys in the concrete today, they come here, they got to see something. That's what they see.
Yeah. There's
what they
something,
can experience. It's a thing you can touch.
He's made known unto us in the breaking of the bread in some mysterious way. We just got probably, $2,000 or $3,000 worth of stuff? Including
5.5 yards, 6 yards, I've seen. I don't know what it is.
Somebody,
when all said and done, it would be $700-$800, something like that. The concrete guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was more than that. Anyway, but it was all donated because... No, but what happened was these guys came in and they ate with us. And I think that had the most important effect.
And they had some questions.
Just get this thought. If you look at that thing that ran last night, I mean, turn the sound down and look at it. I mean, the images to the brain have nothing to do with what's being said. It's a bunch of people sitting around making sandwiches, smiling and eating.
Yeah, I thought that when I was watching.
But it works perfectly. I mean, you don't question that. I didn't question it last night. I didn't notice it until like the fifth time I saw it.
It's very familiar.
Because it does make sense, but it doesn't make sense to this.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's really cool.
I want to study something else. This keeps going on in my mind.
Huh? Let's go to Luke 5.
I'm going to hang a bucket on that.
I heard that.
Oh,
what did he say? It came to pass. Remember what we've said about it came to pass?
Yeah. It's going to be a
attention.
Every time it says in the scriptures, and it came to pass, it means it's something momentous is going to take place. Spiritually momentous. It may not look like anything in the first glance of the words, but it's been the tell in my case in study. Every time I've seen where it said it came to pass, and it just looked like it was some little thing, the more I studied it, the more explosive it became. And if it's good, it's very, very good, and if it's bad, it's like terrible.
And it came to pass.
It came to pass at Passover. It came to pass at midnight.
I love
that.
Yeah.
So anyway, here we got it. We got another, it came to pass. That as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret. Okay, does everybody know what that is?
It's
Galilee. And he saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them, and they were washing their nets. Now,
washing.
Shut up. I knew she was going to say that. Damn little ship. They were washing their nets. Is that all right with you?
In Warsaw.
She heard that.
Yeah.
Okay, now, this, you got to understand something about what this... we're going to find out before that they'd fished all night and they'd caught nothing. And now they were standing by, they were on the shore... They were washing their nets.
Do we know who they were?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was Peter and some other folks. James and...
Ronnie Dunbar.
Simon. There's a lot that can be known about this because they're still fishing the same way now. And they fished at night because these particular types of nets were... before nylon, there wasn't any nylon, and they were a net that was... probably made of linen, and they had to fish at night because the fish could see the net otherwise, and they wouldn't go, you understand that? I mean, the fish isn't going to go run into a net right on purpose, right?
You've got to be kidding me.
So we got...
Unless it's a catfish.
Huh?
Unless it's a catfish.
They didn't have any catfish there.
They really wouldn't.
No.
It's a net.
It's from where?
No.
It was a burlap bag.
No, and what they do, it's a kind of a net that it takes at least three, sometimes four people to handle it because it's round and it pulls, and then there's two men on the oar and they pull the net. And as they pull the net, then they go in a particular motion because they know how the motions of the schools of fish go, and they
pull the net, and as they roll the ball, they fill the net with fish. Now, they'd been fishing all night, because they had to fish at night because of these kind of nets. So you got to know this, right? Or they're not going to fish in the day with those kind of nets, because the fish aren't going to go into the net. You got that? And they had to wash the nets every morning, because if they didn't get the chemicals and the stuff off the lake, because they sometimes drug the bottom, the nets would rot and break, and they had to hang them up to dry. So that's the scene that Jesus came upon. They were washing the nets, hanging them up to dry, cleaning them. After we'll see in a minute, they had been fishing all night and had caught nothing.
In other words, they probably weren't in a good mood.
They were not in a good mood. They were tired. It was hard work. They'd been rowing all night. They caught nothing. They were really pissed. They didn't have any money. Couldn't pay their rent.
It's hard to sleep.
Couldn't pay for their trip to Cancun.
No TV, no VCR.
It was that sort of fast of apathy.
Very hard.
Huh?
But they could go
school. Couple of Levites building a wall.
They're pissed.
You got it? Okay, so we got the picture anyway about the fishermen.
Got it.
Okay. We know it's in the morning. Early in the morning, because they're still doing the net tricks, right? And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's. And again, the ships are there, and they're sitting there cleaning, and there's all these disciples, because they've started to hear rumors about this guy. He's starting to say some pretty wild stuff.
So they're almost done washing the nets, right?
Simon says, what in the hell are you doing in my
right, room? Right. Now, here we go. The people are, the times are right for Messiah. I mean, there in this period of time that Jesus lived, 400 men came claiming to be Messiah. He's the only one that was raised from the dead, though.
Up until that point,
yeah,
if you could get it,
right.
There is that sort that goes on there, isn't there?
Yeah, right. So now, but we have a whole lot of people because the rumor of him has gone out. He's becoming famous. So it's early in the morning. He entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land. And he did it because the people were pushing, you know, there's too many people. And he sat down and he taught the people out of the ship. Now, we could figure out exactly what he was teaching, what scriptures he was teaching, because we know he was teaching from the three-year cycle. And we probably do that some other time, but I don't feel like doing it right now. And he had stopped speaking. When he left speaking, he said unto Simon. Now again, these guys have been working all night. They probably worked for several nights. They haven't caught anything. They're mad. They're upset. They only fish at night because, why? Because the fish see the net. If fish see the net, they run away from the net.
Yeah.
They swim.
Right. One more time. We go in, we go out, and nobody gets hurt.
Yeah. All right. So here comes this guy, this preacher guy, and he's been sitting in his boat because he's well to hell. I'll just row out a little bit. Maybe he'll give me some part of the offering. He goes, sits out there. Now they're done. He's done speaking. The guys are going on, and he tells them, "What does Jesus tell them?" He says, "Launch out
in the day."
In the middle of the day, now it's probably nearing noon, because Jesus talked a lot.
This guy sits on the boat, he thinks he knows about fishing.
He's already right. Gotten to you, Rabbi.
Right.
Who is this guy? He wanted to launch.
All right. Launch.
I got your launch.
He's a rabbi. What's he know about fish?
And see, he just got all well, the
cleaning
the net.
They just cleaned the net, which was a huge job. You got to hear that. It's a huge, huge job to clean the nets.
Besides, it's time for bed.
Yeah.
If they're tired. They're real tired.
I would have told them no. There's no
doubt in my mind you would have told them no.
I would have thrown my keys at him and told him to do it himself.
That's right. Think about that, Harry.
Like I said, if I asked.
Okay.
Launch out into the deep. And let down your nets for a draught, for a catch, to catch fish. There's probably three others in the boat with them. We don't need your fish interpretation.
Yeah, please.
No, I was just thinking when they come out of the water,
I thought he was offering them a beer.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now remember, so Jesus is in the boat with them. There's probably another boat that is a companion boat because of the way they use the nets. But in each boat, there's probably at least three people. You got this picture? Launch and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon, and what did Simon do?
Wine.
Simon whined.
I'm sure there's a lot spoken here that
would... I got it in a better text. It says, this is not a reasonable thing to do. This isn't reasonable. Okay, and Simon, we haven't gotten that part. You reading ahead?
Yes.
Yeah,
speaking of getting his bitch in.
Whoa.
Never mind. And Simon answering said unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night and have taken nothing.
Why do they call him master?
The word rabbi, it should be rabbi.
Oh, I guess
I mean, you understand the word masters, it just means teacher.
It seems as though they were just strangers. He'd been hanging around there for a while.
It's
like if you met a preacher, you'd call him reverend. Yeah. Just even though you didn't know him.
Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. Because he had said something during this speech that he was in his boat, that he heard him. He heard something that he knew was right. Otherwise, he'd never have done this. He heard something that witnessed with the eternity in his soul to the eternity in, he heard. Otherwise, he'd never have done this. You got to get in your mind how stupid this is to do.
And he's jacking around with the guys living. I mean, this is,
well, this is the real. Big. This is the big time. He's telling him to drill a 30,000-foot well in Dallas, Texas.
Without the boat, he's out of luck.
Without the lease.
And when they had done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and they broke the nets. Now, it didn't mean they broke the nets and the fish got loose. It meant that probably they had to take extraordinary action to get the fish into the boat. So they caught more fish than they could dream about. Now think about it. It's daytime, it's noon, and the nets are there, and there's light, and the fish are there. You got it? You got the picture? When they had done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both ships, so that they began to sink. Now, again, computing from the size of the ships, they still do this exactly the same way. The people have computed that they caught in that one swoop over 2 weeks worth of fishing every day. So that they made more money. They made 2 weeks of salary in about an hour or two.
Time to get a witness.
Huh?
The boats are like this picture in the where.
Huh? And Simon Peter saw. When Simon Peter saw. Now look what it says. The word "it" is in italics. See the word "it" in italics? When Simon Peter saw it, strike "it" from the text. It says, when Simon Peter saw, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. Why would he say
that?
It makes sense now because we see that it was a mind-blowing miracle he caused the fish to come into the net. I mean, and they didn't, there's no evidence to indicate they did anything but throw the net out. They didn't row and row and cause the net to move. You hear what I'm saying? And he saw, and he knew who Jesus was. And at that moment, the response is, you cannot hear the word of God without feeling your own sin, without feeling your own inadequacy. And that's what he did. Do you hear me?
Yes.
He saw. But again, they had tried by their own efforts. Night after night, they had worked all night by their own efforts. And yet, at the slightest, they did once the slightest benefit. They let Jesus sit in the boat while he spoke. And they were, you know, I don't want to get us into a tilt and doctrine here, but I want you to see you don't have to take thought for anything if you seek first the kingdom of God. And that's the lesson. Can you hear that? For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the draught of the fishes which they had taken. I mean, Jesus is in the boat, and Peter just falls down. And so was also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Peter. And Jesus said unto, okay, so it was James, John, and Peter were the, fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men. And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him.
Wow. It says here that I don't even have to do anything. I just have to throw myself out there.
Have to worry about anything. But the idea that fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men.
This verse is so twisted by Baptist types. I mean, it's just like you gotta go out and catch them. And
yeah.
I mean, it's so twisted.
Yeah, you gotta hear Tilton.
The beauty here is that if you see, is that the reason that he used the fisherman analogy is because what happens if they're going to be fishers of men, what happens when you take the, you have to take the fish out of the water, and then they have to die so that they can then be reborn to live in a new environment. I mean, what happens when all the fish that they took?
Bring them up on the beach and let them flop until
they bring die. They bring them up on the beach and flop until they die. Anyway, thinking these things. Anybody have any comments? Or?
Well, you know, you say that it's real easy not to take thought for yourself, but
well, it's real easy now for me because I see it doesn't take me any effort. It just takes me zero effort to walk away from a dump. If I'm in the woods and I take a crap in the woods, it just doesn't take any effort to walk away from it. If you see yourself correctly, it takes no effort to abandon yourself. Peace. But if you see yourself as
something worth saving,
then you will never go to the cross. You will put the word of God on your idolatry and the name of God on your idolatry, and pretty soon you will become a Baptist.
Oh, no, anything but that.
I've been there.
No.
Does everybody understand?
Yeah.